The stairwell smelled of wet ink and something older tobacco left to sour in the creases of plaster, the ghost of 100 cigarettes smoked by men who thought the printer below would never notice. Vera climbed 3 flights, the satchel growing heavier with each step, though she carried nothing in it yet. That was the first lie she told herself, that the weight was imaginary, that the dread pooling in her stomach was merely the fatigue of another day spent bending over someone else's words in the ministry basement. She pushed the door open with her shoulder. The flat received her the way it always did, a small exhalation of damp air, the faint metallic tang of the radiator that had never worked properly since before the war, the yellow light from the single bulb overhead flickering as it always did when the tram passed on the street below. Everything exactly as she'd left it this morning. Everything exactly as it would remain while she was gone, indifferent to the fact that she had spent 8 hours translating sentences that meant something other than what they said. She set the satchel on the table. It was a simple thing, brown leather, scuffed at the corners, the kind of bag a clerk might carry to the office and forget about by lunch. Jiri had handed it to her at the cafe with a gesture so casual it might have been an afterthought. He'd been smoking, as he always was, the cigarette balanced between 2 fingers while he spoke in fragments, as he always did. "Lead is heavier than paper," he'd said, and then immediately regretted saying it, because sentimentality was the one thing he couldn't tolerate in himself. He'd stubbed out the cigarette and looked away, toward the window, toward the fog, toward anything that wasn't her face. Vera stared at the satchel now. It sat on the chipped Formica surface, reflecting the yellow light in a dull, oily sheen. She hadn't opened it. She hadn't wanted to. Opening it would make it real, and reality was something she could manage in measured doses. Translate a poem, file a report, go home, repeat, but not all at once. Instead, she went to the kitchen. The sink held the plate from lunch, a smear of butter congealed into a translucent film. She turned the tap and watched the water run clear for a long moment before it warmed, then washed the plate with a strip of soap that had been shrinking since September. Her thumb ached where the knife had caught it yesterday cutting bread, nothing dramatic, just a clean line across the pad of her right thumb. She held it under the water and watched the skin whiten and wrinkle. 6 times she stirred her coffee this morning. She counted, because counting was a way of proving that time was still passing in regular increments, that the world had not suddenly decided to move at a different speed. When she dried her hands on the towel hanging by the stove, she noticed the wallpaper again. It was the same pattern as always: faded roses, the color drained to something between peach and bruisend in the corner near the ceiling. A section had peeled away entirely, revealing the gray plaster beneath. She had meant to mend it for months. She had meant to do many things for months. Vera returned to the table. She opened the satchel. Inside, 3 notebooks, their spines cracked, their pages thick and yellowed, filled with handwriting that ranged from careful cursive to a frantic scrawl that seemed to press through the paper itself. A bundle of typed pages tied with string. A photograph face down. She lifted the photograph first. It showed a man standing in front of a building she didn't recognize: brick, flat-roofed, possibly a factory or a warehouse, and beside him, barely visible, a woman whose face was cut off by the edge of the frame. On the back, in pencil, a date, 1964, no name. She put the photograph down and picked up the top notebook. The first page bore a title in the local language, then a line in English beneath it, her own handwriting, from weeks ago, when she'd been translating the author's memoir for the ministry's cultural affairs division. Innocuous enough, reflections on childhood in the countryside, the taste of plums in August, the sound of church bells on Easter morning. The kind of thing that got approved without comment, stamped, filed, forgot. She laid the photograph aside and reached for the top notebook. Its first page bore a title in the local language, followed by an English subtitle in her own hand, written weeks prior during her stint translating the author's memoir for the ministry's cultural affairs division. It was innocent enough: memories of rural youth, the sweetness of August plums, the tolling of Easter bells. The sort of material that passed review without comment, stamped, filed, and forgot. But there was another piece of work, separate from the memoir, that Jiri had asked her to look at in confidence. A poem, short and deceptively simple, sent to her in a plain envelope with no return address, only his initials scrawled on the front in that hurried hand. "For the record," he'd written. "They won't see it. You might." She had translated it by hand on ministry stationery, the way she translated everything that mattered carefully, in pencil, leaving the original untouched. The poem described a courtyard with three white birds circling above it, a patch of broken glass catching the afternoon sun, and a small wooden box half buried in the dirt. Nothing more, nothing less. She had returned the translation to Jiri with a note that it was charming, pastoral, the sort of thing that would appeal to an American readership hungry for local authenticity. She had not known then that charm was the easiest disguise. But she had noticed something, a discrepancy. In the published version, though, one destined for the American publisher Jiri mentioned in those fragmentary ways, he'd changed a single sentence. Where the original read "I had a difficult year," the published text read "I had a year." Not a dramatic alteration, not a political statement on its face. But it was smaller, quieter, and in its quietness it contained everything. A difficult year implied struggle, resistance, the kind of year that required explanation. A year was just a year. It asked nothing of the reader. It offered nothing. It was the bureaucratic equivalent of erasure. She had flagged it in the margin of her translation draft with a small, neat question mark. She had assumed it was a stylistic choice. She had assumed it was nothing. Now, looking at the notebooks, she wondered if the question mark had been the first mistake. She flipped through the pages quickly, then slowly, reading fragments in Czech and English, the way she read everything now as if every sentence might contain a hidden layer, a meaning beneath the meaning, a code disguised as confession. The handwriting grew more erratic toward the middle of the second notebook, as though the writer's hands were shaking, or as though the act of writing itself had become dangerous. There were passages that stopped mid-sentence. Pages that ended with ellipses that might have been the writer's or might have been hers, imposed in the act of translation, a translator's impulse to finish what was left unfinished. Vera pressed her palm flat against the table and leaned forward. The kitchen clock ticked. The radiator clanked. Somewhere below, the printer's equipment groaned to life, the deep, rhythmic thud of the press starting up for the evening edition. The smell of fresh ink rising through the floorboards in thin, blue-gray waves. She should have been glad for the noise. The press provided cover, a reason for sounds that might otherwise attract attention. But today, it sounded like something else. It sounded like a machine that had been running for years and would keep running whether anyone paid attention to what it produced or not. She closed the top notebook and set it aside. Then she stood and walked to the window. The street below was narrow, lined with buildings that had survived two wars and a revolution and were now leaning slightly toward each other as though conspiring. A woman in a dark coat walked past, carrying a canvas bag. Two boys ran ahead of her, laughing, their voices thin and bright in the cold air. Further down, a tram hesitated at the corner, its headlights cutting through the fog in pale cones, then moved on. Prague held its breath, as it always did, waiting for the next word, the next order. The next poem that was not a poem at all. Vera pressed her forehead against the glass. It was cold. The cold seeped through the thin wool of her sweater and settled into her bones, familiar and almost comforting. She had lived in this flat since she was 21, since before the spring, before the thaw, before anyone had begun to believe that things might change. She had learned its rhythms, the radiator's metallic hiss in February, the street lamp outside flickering at precisely 6:47 in the evening, and the printer's press starting at 4:00 p.m. to run until midnight, filling the building with a vibration that traveled up through the floor and into the soles of her feet. She turned away from the window and walked to the bedroom. The floorboards here were older than the rest of the flat, laid down when the building was constructed in the 1880s, wide plank pine that had worn smooth in the center from decades of footsteps. She knelt and ran her fingers along the seam between two boards. There was a loose one near the foot of the bed, the one she'd noticed months ago and never reported to the landlord, who never came anyway. She pried at the edge with her thumbnail. The wood resisted, then gave with a soft crack. Beneath it, darkness and the smell of dust and dry rot and a shallow cavity roughly the size of a shoebox. She had considered using this space before. She had never had reason to. Vera stood and returned to the living room. She gathered the notebooks, the typed pages, the photograph. She carried them to the bedroom and knelt again. She lowered the satchel into the cavity beneath the floorboard. It fit, barely, the leather scraping against the rough edges of the opening. She pushed it down until it settled into the dark. Then she replaced the board. It didn't sit perfectly flush. There was a slight ridge, a whisper of elevation that her fingertips would find if she ran them across the surface, but her shoes would never notice. She pressed down hard with both palms until the wood stopped protesting. She stood and brushed the dust from her knees. The flat was silent except for the radiator's occasional clank and the distant thud of the printer below. She walked back to the table and looked at the empty satchel, now just a folded shape of worn leather, its purpose fulfilled, its contents buried. Her thumb throbbed. She wrapped it around the edge of the table and held on. Downstairs, the printer's press continued its steady work, producing pages that would be read and discarded, stories that would matter to no one, words that would travel through the city and disappear into apartments like this one, into hands that would hold them briefly and then let go. The ink would dry. The paper would yellow. The words would remain, waiting. Vera went to the kitchen and filled the kettle. She set it on the stove and turned the flame. While the water heated, she took a clean plate from the cupboard and spread butter on a slice of bread. She sat at the table and ate in silence, chewing slowly, listening to the kettle begin its low whistle. Outside, the fog thickened. The street lamp flickered on, though it was only 5 o'clock. The tram passed again, slower this time, its passengers visible as shadows behind fogged glass, faces pressed against the windows, looking out at a city they no longer recognized. Vera finished her bread. She washed the plate. She dried her hands on the towel. She stood in the kitchen and waited for the kettle to boil, listening to the sound rise from a murmur to a sustained note, steady and inevitable, a physical constant that ignored the political weather above it. She carried the kettle to the table and poured. The steam rose in a thin column, catching the yellow light, curling upward and dissolving into the air. She picked up the mug and held it with both hands, feeling the heat seep into her palms, into her wrists, into the ache in her thumb. The flat was quiet. The flat was always quiet. But tonight the silence felt different, not empty, but full, as though the walls themselves were holding something back, containing it, waiting for the moment when the pressure became too great and the silence broke. Vera drank her tea. She set the mug down. She walked to the bedroom and knelt once more, pressing her ear to the floorboard, listening for the faintest sound from below the rustle of paper, the creak of leather, the whisper of words that had been buried and were now waiting. There was nothing. Only the flat's ordinary silence, the buildings settling, the night settling over Prague like a blanket that was too thin to keep out the cold. She stood and switched off the bedroom light. In the hallway, she paused at the door to her mother's room. It was closed. Inside, Alina slept or pretended to, feigning indifference when Vera came home late, masking her anxiety by refusing to count the hours or sit by the window watching for the tram that would bring her daughter back. Vera closed the front door softly and locked it. She stood in the hallway for a moment, her hand on the lock, feeling the metal cold beneath her fingers. Then she walked to the bedroom, undressed, and lay down in the dark. The kettle clicked off somewhere in the kitchen, an automatic shutoff she'd installed months ago and never used. The radiator hissed. The printer below had stopped. The city exhaled. The satchel lay silent beneath the floorboards, a heavy secret waiting in the dark.